Dave Nicolai, University of Minnesota, Extension Regional Educator in Crops.
Dave, let's start with a look back at the month of July and how weather affected crop development as we're now into August.
Well, it certainly has kept pace in terms of crop development. You remember that we really had a lot of growing degree day units May and June, got things off really fast and pushed. But we had a lot of areas in Minnesota that were succumbed to too much rain. And it was these heavy rain impulse showers, thunderstorms, whatever you want to call them, that really impacted and caused a lot of variability in the corn crop and also in the soybean crop. But development has kept pace. We've been had green temperatures in the 70s and 80s, and I think we'll finish off strong here in the month of September.
With all that moisture, what are some of the most common stresses that you're seeing out in the field?
Well, certainly there's number one in the corn probably was there was a loss or lack of nitrogen in situations with that. Then you had the physical effects of probably too much rain in terms of drowning out the crop or causing restrictions and poor root development. Those would probably be the bigger issues. I suspect that we might have other foliar disease and stock concerns as the summer goes along that haven't really manifested themselves yet. But we do have bacterial diseases that would be prominent in bacterial stripe and in corn and that type of a situation. Soybeans, that's probably a little bit different situation. We had some seedling diseases, early on, but certainly things like white mold, we expect it to be developing already. And I talked to Dr. Dean Melvick on campus, and we really have to be mindful of other things that would develop besides just septoria and brown spot, but it also has to do with SDS. Sudden death syndrome that we get in the soybeans, and that'll show up here too in the month of August. So, and it already has in its plot. So we expect that to develop as well.
I've heard that aphids have been showing up too, as far as numbers and treatments. What are you seeing?
Well, we had a bigger flush to begin with here in that Stearns County area, northern Candy, Ohio, northern Meeker counties, and some of those particular situations. And now since then, this week of Farm Fest was going to be heavier here in southwest Minnesota. We've had planes flying, for making applications. So I expect more of that would probably continue. And it'll be varied. Some fields are going to be more problems than other ones. Again, scouting the economic threshold, but the month of August is always tricky because we're getting to the end of things, and that makes it more difficult. And by the time you get to the very end of the month, you're into situations where you might have a situation develop where they actually are moving back into buckthorn and those types of situations.
As growers start to sort of prepare themselves for fall harvest, when they think about yield potential, they think about timing. First, with timing, Dave, do you think we're going to see harvest begin earlier than normal here? And as far as yield potential, with all that variability, how do you kind of get a feel for what might be out there?
Well, I think in the case of corn, we're certainly going to have a lot of variability because some of that was subsided and really wasn't really ready and available. And I know that farmers want to put in more consistent, corn in the bin if that's their choice in storage. So I expect because of that situations, they're going to push this off until the very end of September with that. The really early maturity beans, if they did plant an early maturity bean, they should be ready, into September. I know talking to folks at the sugar beet cooperative, here a gentleman that works with that, indicated that'll probably be close to the 29th of August. They have that early campaign when they open up the fields. So I think things will tend to be a little bit later because of that. And with that, it all depends upon the weather and when we get black layer in the corn. So there's some models indicating that, but I haven't seen anything recently, but I imagine it'll be towards pushed off a little bit farther.
The university certainly hangs its hat on research, and a silver lining perhaps to the extreme weather conditions we've had in 2018, it lends itself to learning more about hybrids and varieties, weed control, disease management, a lot of things that in a normal year, maybe you couldn't dig so deep.
Well, that's correct. Right, we're here at Farm Fest today, and we have a lot of our seed suppliers here as well, and it's a good time to talk to those seed suppliers about next year, because varietal characteristics, I think, are still number one here. in whether it's soybeans or corn from a disease and a pest resistance, but as well as yield. And so it's critical to find out what's working and what's not, and then they should look at those plot results that come in, especially from multiple locations. Now, with the university, we involved in testing on soybeans and corn, and that'll come out this fall in terms of varietal resistance. But we had some concerns this year, you know, already with invasive weeds and so forth and situations with that, but particularly the need of growers having to put on a pre-emergence followed by a post. And right now you can see water hemp sticking up above the soybeans in the area here because that's a late emerger and that'll be continuing to be a problem. So I think some of those issues will be in the forefront. Certainly, you know, soybean aphids are one of those that come and go depending upon the year, but are apparent this next year. But we do note that some areas of the state have been dry. Up in the northwestern Minnesota, I talked to a gentleman in this area that indicated concerns, and just across from North Dakota in spider mites. So, you know, it's kind of feast or famine where you're at.
You have some weeds on display here at Farm Fest, and I know Palmer amaranth is one of those weeds, and it gets a lot of attention. But so far, it seems like the state has done a nice job of controlling the couple of isolated cases that we've had.
Yes, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, much to their credit, has been very proactive. In the control of that, not only on the controlling of any existing weed populations that come in, but also in terms of making sure that the seed itself is inspected, and they can do a good job in terms of whether it's pollinator seed mixes or other seed coming in there, that the seed tag is followed, and the distributor is held accountable for that as well. So they do a good job and with that. But here today, we were talked about a couple of things besides Palmer. We have redwood pigweed. Redwood pigweed, of course, and, of course, water hemp, which is omnipresent in situations. And then we have a weed that probably a lot of folks haven't seen here before, and it's called Powell pigweed, which can be confused with the other ones. It's tall, like redwood pigweed. It has a little bit of hair on the petiole and the leaf blade, but you see more of it down in Kansas and Nebraska and some of those other areas in Dakotas, and it seems to be moving into more of western Minnesota. Fortunately, it can be readily controlled, not quite as serious as water hemp, but for a lot of people, there's a lot of diversity out here, and it's difficult to control unless you are trained a little bit.
Anything else you want to make sure we talk about today, Dave?
Well, I guess at this point in time, we did mention about really scouting that action threshold of 250 aphids per plant on 80% of the soybeans and increasing, you know, because you want to have those beneficials work for you and not wipe those out in terms of an inadvertent spray. So keep that in mind as well. Scout for sudden death syndrome and white mold and so forth, but get out and look at the crop, you know, and something other than 50 miles an hour in a pickup is my recommendation in there. And I think it's going to be important to look at the corn as well and consider all of these options and look at the data as much as you can.
With the economic threshold on soybean aphid, Dave, I've talked to a handful of farmers this week who, and maybe I just misunderstood them, but their comment about controlling aphid, it sounded like their approach was more a preventative approach where they would treat not necessarily before you hit that 250 aphids per plant threshold. Is it still hard to kind of drill that into the growers' minds?
Well, I think there's a concept that kind of gets lost here sometimes, and that is when we talk about 250, we're talking about an economic threshold. When we talk about an injury level that causes injury, it's much higher. It gets up to that 500 or 600 aphids per plant. So the economic threshold is set deliberately low so that people have an opportunity to go out in the field and or make their product choices and get ready to go. So it's not the same thing as injury. Injury is much higher. So I kind of beg to differ on those situations and say, you know, the economics, there's still plenty of time. We're not going to lose money from an injury situation with that. There are plenty of other factors I would worry about before then, including, you know, water hemp and other situations that could develop in there or other diseases. So keep those two concepts in mind. Economic threshold different than economic injury.
In that 250 number, you set it low. Maybe another reason for that is aphid numbers can dramatically increase in just a day or two, can't they?
Oh, yes. I mean, they can pop in a week's time. So really what you really need to be able to do here is if you notice them or in the neighbors is I would be looking at these fields every 3 or 4 days. And I know it's nice to go on vacation, but it's good to be having someone to monitor if you can't do that, because numbers can can increase rapidly, and we can get into more complicated things than we can on the radio here today. But talking about, you know, the degree days and aphid days and so forth. But there are different concepts to monitoring. But either way is making sure that that field is visited on a regular basis.
I should give you a chance too, Dave. I know you've been working on a podcast here throughout the growing season. Some great information, and for our listeners that would like to follow along with that, where can they go?
Well, they can go to the probably University of Minnesota. We have a Crop E-News, or just search for that, Google for that, and we usually have announcements of when those are coming up or when those are available. We put them on iTunes, et cetera. We're hoping to have one here on soybean diseases and work on that this next week, but we talk to a lot of our entomologists and plant pathologists and weed scientists, and it's a good opportunity for you to listen on something when you have a point in time. Can spend maybe that 20 minutes or so.
Dave, I really appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thank you very much.